You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi.
And I'm Katie Frankowitz. The final person missing following the Nippon Dyna Wave disaster in Longview was identified Saturday. That brings the total confirmed deaths at the paper mill to 11. Joni Audenland reports.
At a press conference, the names of all 11 victims of the disaster, caused by a ruptured tank full of dangerous chemicals, were read aloud.
29-year-old Tyler Covington.
Family members of the latest victim, Norman Barlow, watched from behind a fence. Many were visibly emotional.
And 58-year-old Norman Barlow.
Barlow's daughter, 30-year-old Brooke Iverson, said her father had only worked at the plant for 3 months, but was well-respected in the trades community.
He raised me as a single dad. You name it, he was there. He did it all. He made it look effortless. Effortless. He was strong. He was the best guy out there.
Officials have so far declined to comment on the potential causes of the disaster, but families say they're looking for answers. Joni Audenland, Longview, Washington.
Federal investigators are in Longview this week to look into the deadly rupture of the chemical tank, but funding for their work might be cut before the investigation is complete. Courtney Sherwood explains.
The U.S. Chemical Safety Board is a small independent agency that investigates disasters like the one that killed 11 people at the Nippon Dyna Wave paper mill last week. President Donald Trump has been trying to defund the agency since his first term in office. Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez represents Longview. She says she hopes the Trump administration will reconsider that policy.
People want a unbiased, thorough investigation. We want safe jobs. An important partner in this is the watchdog agency, the Chemical Safety Board. Unfortunately, their budget was zeroed out by the president.
The administration has said CSB's work overlaps with other federal agencies. Glusenkamp-Perez says she'll advocate for Congress to keep funding CSB and for the president to appoint tradespeople to its board. I'm Courtney Sherwood, reporting.
The disaster in Longview involving hazardous chemicals has also raised questions about whether a similar incident can happen in Oregon. Mariana Ruiz Temple is the Oregon State Fire Marshal.
I think the answer is yes. We do have chemicals and we do have facilities like that in Oregon. And so having the right training and planning in advance, but also the knowledge of what chemicals are in your community are important.
12 regional hazmat teams are prepared to respond to or assist with hazmat incidents across Oregon. Companies in Oregon are also required to report hazardous materials stored on site. This is local and regional news on KMUN. An oil leak at the port of Astoria has been contained as of Monday, according to officials. An abandoned underwater fuel line began leaking oil into the Columbia River on Friday near the port of Astoria's Pier 2. Port workers, the U.S. Coast Guard, and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality responded over the weekend to contain the leak. Port Executive Director Will Isom says work has now shifted to cleaning up and quantifying the spill. He estimates that only a small amount of oil leaked out, but said it's hard to know the total amount. The source of the leak was an abandoned fuel line about 12 inches in diameter, filled with leftover bunker fuel, a type of fuel used on large cargo ships. This story comes to us through a news partnership with The Astorian, online at dailyastorian.com.
Three seats on the Astoria City Council are up for election in November, and filing opens tomorrow. The terms for Councilor Ward 1, Councilor Ward 3, and Mayor will expire December 31st. Sean Davis, a combat veteran and co-founder of the nonprofit Rogue Cell, has announced his intention to run for mayor. Incumbent Sean Fitzpatrick has not said if he plans to run again. Fitzpatrick ran uncontested in 2022 and replaced Bruce Jones. Elizabeth Adams, the Ward 3 incumbent representing Astoria's core downtown area, and Andy Davis, the Ward 1 incumbent representing the Uniontown area, had previously told KMUN they would either not file or were unsure about their plans. Oregon's general election is November 3rd. Candidates for the Ward 1 seat must submit a petition signed by 14 registered voters in that ward. Candidates for the Ward 3 seat need 13 signatures from registered voters in that ward. To file for mayor, candidates must submit a petition signed by 48 registered voters within city limits. Signature sheets must be signed by the election office prior to circulation. Starting this year, elected incumbents must file by August 18, 2026 at 4 p.m. Other candidates and appointed incumbents must file by August 25th at 4 p.m. Petition forms and other materials are available on the city website or may be obtained at City Hall in the Finance Department, located on the third floor at 1095 Duane Street.
The Oregon Coast Humane Society says it has identified two separate dogs infected with parvo in the Florence area. The nonprofit says locals and visitors should take precautions against the highly infectious canine disease. KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White reports.
The Oregon Coast Humane Society Executive Director Elizabeth Thompson says parvo can be deadly to dogs. She says pet owners should make sure their dogs are fully vaccinated. They should also be cautious about visiting high pet traffic areas.
If they're older, they're vulnerable. If they're really young, they're vulnerable. Or if they have some kind of immune issue already, just like people, the ones of us that are struggling already are more likely to get sick from something else.
Thompson says the nonprofit is working on contact tracing and has distributed vaccines to unhoused dog owners around the Florence area. The vaccine is available at a vet or over the counter. I'm Rebecca Hansen-White reporting.
A group of Siletz Indians are holding a presentation on Saturday, June 6th, to honor a humpback whale that washed ashore in Lincoln County last fall and died. As KLCC's Brian Bull reports, it's to help non-natives understand the historical and cultural significance of these mammals.
The Siletz sent a team in mid-November to do a traditional salvage of the whale, a common practice for coastal native people for centuries. Lisa Norton is the tribe's chief administrative officer. She and several others will discuss whales through storytelling in a welcoming and open space near the Amanda Trail. Norton hopes the audience leaves with one main takeaway.
Gaining an understanding of what it meant to us as a people, as individuals, and for those who were already connected with the whale to understand that connection a little bit deeper, or maybe understand that that connection isn't over and that it will live on in the stories that we do tell.
Norton says the Siletz's Cultural and Natural Resources Departments will eventually decide what would be done with the whale's bones and other materials. I'm Brian Bull, reporting in Eugene.
Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. A federal judge ruled May 29th that New Hampshire's 2024 proof of citizenship law, intended to stop a microscopic non-citizen voting and voter fraud threat, created a significant burden to eligible voters and violated the U.S. Constitution. Prior to HB 1569, New Hampshire required citizenship information at registration, but allowed eligible voters who didn't bring a birth certificate or U.S. passport to legally attest to citizenship using a qualified voter affidavit. HB 1569 repealed the affidavit and required documentary proof, often not readily available or affordable to many voters. Expert testimony in the case found that between 1998 and 2024, only 8 non-citizens may have cast a ballot, resulting in a 0.00031% rate of non-citizen voting. 5 of those voters were registered through a poll worker's error, not fraud by the non-citizen. In comparison, over 10% of voter registrations from April to November 2024 used the qualified voter affidavit to attest citizenship, almost 15,000 voters. In a 98-page opinion, Judge Samantha D. Elliott ruled that the repeal of the qualified voter affidavit created a burden for those voters under the First and 14th Amendments. We've linked to the decision at American Democracy Minute. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to KMUN.